Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Glenmark Life Sciences Q4 FY 2022 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Soumi Rao, General Manager, Corporate Communications, Glenmark Life Sciences. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us early this morning. We welcome you all to the Q4 FY 2022 earnings call of Glenmark Life Sciences Limited. Today we have with us Dr. Yasir Rawjee, our MD and CEO, and Mr. Bhavesh Pujara, our CFO. As we begin the earnings call, here is a summary of our results. We registered revenue from operations of rupees 5,140.6 million for the fourth quarter of FY 2022, recording a YOY growth of 10%, and rupees 21,232.1 million for the full year, registering a growth of 12.6%. EBITDA was at rupees 1,473.1 million for the quarter, with margin at 28.7%, and rupees 6,307.6 million for FY 2022, with margin at 29.7%. Profit after tax was at rupees 989 million in Q4 FY 2022, registering a degrowth of 5.5% YOY, and rupees 4,187.2 million in FY 2022, a growth of 19.1%. Coming to our business performance, revenues from the generic API segment increased by 12.1%, and the CDMO business registered a growth of 12.4% in FY 2022. During FY 2022, revenues from our regulated markets witnessed a healthy growth of 21.4% YOY, whereas revenues from the emerging markets declined by 6.3% YOY due to high base of COVID product sales last year. Products from key chronic therapeutic areas accounted for 62.9% of net sales in FY 2022, growing at 12.7% for the year. Our capital expenditure for the quarter was rupees 664.6 million, and for FY 2022 it was rupees 1,451.5 million. Expansion work at Dahej and Ankleshwar facilities is ongoing, and we plan to commence construction at our newly acquired site in Solapur in FY 2023. R&D expenditure for the quarter was at rupees 143.1 million, 2.8% of sales, and for the full financial year it stood at 572 million, 2.7% of sales. The board has recommended a final dividend of rupees 10.5 per equity share of face value of rupees 2 for the year ended 2022. The total dividend for the financial year March 2022 amounts to rupees 21 per share of face value of rupees 2 each. Amongst other business highlights, we filed 15 DMF CEPs across major markets during the quarter, and as on 31st March 2022, cumulative filings stood at 433. Today we have four other product compounds in our development pipeline. We also have seven products in the oncology space. Now I would quickly read the disclaimer. Some of the information in the document, especially information with respect to our plans and strategies, may contain certain forward-looking statements that involve risks and uncertainties. These statements are based on current expectations, forecasts, and assumptions that are subject to risks and uncertainties, which could cause results to differ materially from these statements depending upon economic conditions, government policies, and other incidental factors. Such statements should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. Our actual results may differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these forward-looking statements. With that, I invite Dr. Yasir Rawjee to say a few words before we open the floor for the Q&A session. Thank you, and over to you, Dr. Rawjee.
Thank you, Soumi, and welcome to everybody. Good morning to you. I think after quite a few quarters, we are probably welcoming people to a more normal world. People have started going back to work. COVID seems to have left us, hopefully. Of course, there are still some challenges that we see with our customers in Europe and but overall, the environment is becoming more normal, so hopefully this is something that continues. Of course, challenges are going to continue to remain geopolitically. We know all that. I don't need to speak about it, but then there is an impact of all this on the industry. I just want to recap, you know, the kind of challenges that we faced in the last year, you know, as a company and for the industry at large. So we had, if you recall, back in July, August, the whole energy crisis, right, with coal energy suddenly becoming bad energy and everything else being promoted, which resulted in a lot of raw material shortages. And as a result, there was huge price spikes in raw materials. Following that, you know, there was a hit on solvent prices, raw material prices, like I already said. And then there was the Omicron that came and hit, right? And finally, now this challenge with you know, the Russia and Ukraine issue, that is basically impacting energy prices, particularly gas. So when we come to Glenmark Life Sciences, how do we see all that? I mean, the good thing is when I look back, I think we've had a fantastic year. And the reason I say that is because in spite of all these headwinds, as a company, we've managed to keep our business on track and continue to build confidence with customers on our ability to serve them with, you know, the right quality, the right price, and supply, no interruption in supplies. So this is, I would say, these are challenges that we've been able to deal with very successfully. We hope the world will become a more normal place, and that should help our business to continue on the path of stability as well as growth. I just want to remind you that we continue to focus on our short, mid, and long-term priorities, the short-term priorities being to retain the customer focus across geographies, the mid-term focus being to continue to drive our R&D and operations to be more efficient, to file in time across global regulatory bodies so that we can service our customers across the geographies. And finally, longer term, the plans for expansion, which are happening pretty much on track. There have been a few small delays here and there as a result of Omicron, and I had addressed this in my last earnings call for quarter three. So business is good. Demand is very solid with our customers. Confidence is also very high, and you can see it reflected in our yearly results that in spite of all these headwinds and challenges, Glenmark Life Sciences continues to do well and deal with these challenges. So with that, I'll close my opening remarks and you know, look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, in order to ask a question, you may please press star and one. The first question is on the line of Neha Manpuria from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. My first question is, you know, just trying to understand if we are seeing any issues in our ability to, you know, source raw material, you know, because of, you know, a lockdown in China. Do you think that could impact, you know, not so, the coming few months if the lockdown extends further than May?
Yeah, so thanks, Neha, for the question. We are watching this situation. So far, likely to impact us, because typically we have been seeing delays out of China. Obviously, we didn't predict that this one would come along, but if you recall back in Feb, there was the spring break and then the Beijing Winter Olympics. And so we've sort of continued to have a sort of longer supply chain built out of China. And as a result, there is no impact on us. Even this latest crisis is unlikely to impact us unless it stretches for 2 to 3 months. Of course, we are still, you know, looking at mitigating, you know, the situation through shipments from other ports. Shanghai port is the largest port that clears hazardous cargo. And as a result of that, you know, the impact on our industry is big. But then there are other ports like Ningbo and Qingdao that are still functioning, and we are still able to manage to get supplies. But Q1, there is no impact. Q2, very little impact, and let's see how it goes.
Understood. And so from a margin perspective, you know, given that we had raw materials going into Chinese New Year and Winter Olympics, and the fact that, you know, the gas price increases or crude price increases have come after that, do we see incremental risk to margins, you know, in the next few quarters, particularly, you know, since we also have our CAPEX that will get commissioned in the second half? You know, if you could just get, update us on that too.
So, Neha, again, margins, like you said, right, we've already sort of built in and factored in quite a few of these increases, right? So unlikely to dip any further. You know, we'll continue to maintain margins at similar levels that we've seen in Q3 and Q4. So I think we should be okay on margins.
And on the CAPEX, sir, are we on track with the timelines that we'd mentioned in the previous call? When should we start seeing the backward integration and the other CAPEX?
So BI will come in September. September is when we are hoping to get our BI facility. This is the 400 kiloliters at Ankleshwar. And the Dahej will come on sooner. So we've got four modules coming at the Dahej. Phase one will come in July. So that's well on track. We had a couple of months slowdown in the Dahej when Omicron hit, because we were not able to bring as many number of, you know, contractors and labor on the site. So that had already been, you know, we'd alerted, you know, earlier in the last. So, I mean, that's, so now it's coming to July. So it's well on track, I would say, you know.
And so from the Dahej contribution perspective, this should start reflecting in our growth numbers from second half in that case?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because this is a big capacity. If you recall,
yeah,
it's 240 KL that we are adding. Plus our oncology block is also coming, you know, in the same time frame.
Understood. Thank you so much, sir.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. That is on the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning and thank you for taking my question. Just the first one on the two segments of revenue, both generic API and CDMO. If you could help us understand how this would likely pan out in the fiscal 23 in terms of either upline expectations or some kind of an outlook there. And what are the dynamics you're seeing in the both the businesses? I think fourth quarter CDMO business has declined. Maybe it's of a high base or we had some one-off last year quarter. So if you can explain the two businesses, please. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Shyam, let me address the smaller business because that's the CDMO business. So what happens here is that last year, like you mentioned, we were almost – we had a huge upside last year. And the way we look at it now is it was largely a result of stocking, because Q4 for us is Q1 for our customer. And they were in this mode because of, you know, all kinds of scares on the supply chain to sort of build up. And so this degrowth we are seeing is a result of that higher base. But we've seen consistent growth in this year and highly encouraged that the CDMO business will continue to grow, even though it's on a relatively small base of three projects. So I expect that, you know, this business will continue to grow by all accounts. There is a demand from all our customers on these projects. You know, There is a fourth project that did get, you know, will probably happen in Q3 of this year, you know, and that should see, we should see a bigger uptick, you know, in CDMO revenues from Q3 or Q4 of this year. So that's CDMO. As far as generic goes, see, the nice thing about generic is that we are very well distributed across geographies. And so when we look at this last year, for instance, right, while there were some pressures from Europe and, you know, India, right, we and a little bit from the U.S., three of the regions have done very well. So LATAM, Japan, and even the U.S. has done very well. So as a result of that, you know, the slight sort of dips in these other markets have been more than offset by, you know, growth in the Japan, LATAM, and U.S. markets. So I think this is something that will continue. Japan, LATAM, and U.S. will continue to remain strong. And I believe that Europe should see a comeback because we are reintroducing some APIs again, second generation processes again. And this should see a reasonable uptick in the Europe business as well. India also, I believe, will continue to do well. So overall, we are expecting our generic business to continue to, you know, drive because it's the biggest business. And regionally also, there's strength across the regions.
So, Dr. Yasir, just any quantitative guidance on what the revenue growth potentially could be for fiscal 23?
Yeah, Shyam, I think we should consider between 12 to 14% on an overall basis for our growth.
Fair enough. Just a second question on just digging deeper into the generic API piece, right? We have seen in different, at least regulated markets, quite a bit of pricing pressure on the formulation companies. So what are you seeing in terms of the trends? Is there a sense that you could pass on some of the, I mean, you give your guidance of margins being stable at Q3, Q4. So what are some of the things that you're building into your expectations for pricing for your generic APIs?
Okay. So, Shyam, we've had some success with passing on, price increases to customers. And I think that for those sets of increases, this is something that is likely to continue. There are other APIs where customers are having a very rough time at the front end. And at this point, we are just, you know, in negotiations and discussions with customers on where we can take the price increases. Because they do realize that we are, you know, facing cost pressures. And, but then it's a partnership and we don't want to sort of rock the boat for our customers at the front end and, you know, have them, you know, lose business to competition. So it will be done selectively and judiciously, plus, you know, partnering with our customers so that, you know, they continue to have confidence that we will support them. That's the way we're going to approach the whole thing. And we've been doing that for the last 3-4 quarters now.
Got it. Thank you, Dr. Yasir, and all the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Vikas Sharda from NT Asset. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Yasir.
Hi.
Yeah, two questions. One is that, for the previous question, you answered that quantitative guidance of 12 to 14% revenue growth. How would that look like, say, in the first half versus second half? Because the base is also plays a role, and so is your capacity expansion. And how relevant is quarter-on-quarter growth for your business? I mean, is that a relevant metric to look at?
So, Vikas, the thing is that we, frankly, quarter-on-quarter is not a relevant metric. Okay. Things do, you know, move around, and regionally there could be ups and downs. So it's difficult to predict, right? On the year basis, we are very confident of this growth. Coming to the first half versus second half, for sure, second half is likely to be better simply because our ability to service the business is going to be much better on account of the extra capacity that we will have at Dahej. Plus, the BI block that is coming in Ankleshwar will also be operational. Of course, that doesn't impact our front-end capacity in a big way, but it will free up things for us from an intermediates perspective. So overall, we expect that second half would be, bigger in terms of growth, and first half would be, a little lesser in terms of the growth.
And in terms of the margins, I mean, you expect the Q3, Q4 margins to sustain, but incrementally, how do you see the cost pressures, either on raw material side as well as the other expenses?
So today, the only big question mark for us, right, is this thing about gas prices. See, I'll give you a sense, right? Last year, July, August, gas prices were around 35 rupees per standard cubic meter. And it jumped up to 62 rupees in a very short time. We stayed in the 62 rupee sort of thing for about, 2-3 months in, October, November, and the end of last year. And then in March, 30% of our supplies are coming at 190 rupees. So, I mean, you can imagine 35 rupees and then now 30% coming at 190 rupees. So gas prices are, going very, very bad, right? And although, we have mitigated quite a bit, with switching to coal and briquettes, its impact will come second half of the year. The full impact will come in the second half of the year. So there should be, this is the only thing that has not been factored into the margin. So maybe, half a point to a point at the max, right, would if this kind of sort of escalating gas prices hit us, right, then there could be some, impact in the first half. But otherwise, I think, like I told Neha, we have covered, all the price increases, through customer negotiations, as well as, there's been quite a bit of improvement on the efficiency side as well.
Understood. And finally, any comments on Mr. Pujara's exit?
I'll let Bhavesh take that himself.
Yeah, Vikas. So there is an exciting opportunity that I don't want to let go of. So I brought it up with Yasir and management over here. So I think, we are closing the year on a good note. This also gave us an opportunity to close our results early. So, and then the foundations are all laid. I think the management is fully committed to deliver the results on the same way we have done so far. So I think that is it. I'm looking forward to the new assignment and wishing all the best to Glenmark Life Sciences.
Yeah, so I'll add Vikas, that Bhavesh has been a great support, right? He was with us through the IPO, and it's not great good to see him go, but then he's got his priorities and he's sort of moving along with that. So, we'll move on.
Yeah, understood. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. Yasir, on the question about, cost pressures, now some of the cost pressures largely are, input cost driven, and they should be universal. So at what stage in your expectation, does the industry really pass them on to the customers?
Yeah, Nitin, I mean, you're right. I completely agree that it is universal. Everyone's getting hammered by these gas prices as well as input prices, particularly on the solvent side, because that's again a more universal commodity and that's driven by more or less by international prices, right? But then the question about, mitigating by passing it on to customers and so on is a judgment call that you take, you know, given how the customer is doing in the front end. Okay. So some customers we know are dominant, you know, with the market share, and, you know, they have a very strong position, unlikely to lose it. And those are the kinds of customers that have agreed to give us, you know, price increases and said that, yeah, okay, we understand. Of course, we also understand that when things go back to normal, you know, you guys will bring down prices. And we are okay to do that because end of the day, we don't want to take advantage of a bad situation. But then there are other customers that are having a much more difficult time, you know. I mean, Shyam talked about it, right, in the front end, how people are, you know, in the U.S. market, especially some in Europe, are having a lot of challenges because of their you know, competition at the front end and the buying patterns in the U.S. with the big three, right, now probably big four. But the thing is that, you know, with all that happening, we need to be a bit more measured in terms of going to customers and sort of, you know, asking for a price increase and putting a price increase unilaterally. It's being done through mutual discussion and agreement, and I think that's a better way to sort of handle it going forward.
No, that I completely appreciate. My point is, you know, on a structural basis, assuming this is becomes like a new normal or around these levels of, you know, energy costs and everything, I mean, does it mean a margin squeeze for the API industry in general, or some of it get passed on to the end, to the formulation guy and eventually the end consumer? I mean, how does that play out over the next year or so?
See, Nitin, if it's something that continues to be the way it is today, then it has more or less been baked in, right? Okay. So we'll continue and we'll watch, right? But let's say if it goes crazy, right? I mean, you know, and it becomes unsustainable, then we're going to have to open it up to the customer and say, look, you know, you take it at a higher price, so then, you know, we'll exit eventually, right? We'll support you until, you know, you want us, you know, and then that's it. We'll move. I think that's how we'll take that conversation. I hope it doesn't go there. It doesn't look like, you know, things are going to get bad. Like I said, even with these gas prices going to 190 rupees, I mean, the overall impact is not going to be that significant. Like I said, half a point to a little more than half a point, but that's about it. I don't think it's going to, you know, alter the overall look and feel of the business.
Fair enough. If I just probably push it a little bit around that. So now, you know, some of these gas issue, energy cost issues are more acute for companies in Europe. And I presume in some of your APIs, are there any relevant European competitors in some of your products? And two, have you been expecting or seeing any meaning, larger impact on those players' ability to compete in the market?
Nitin, could you please repeat that question? I'm sorry, but the last part I missed what you said.
What I meant is, you know, Europe has a more acute problem on the energy side. So are we seeing a more favorable competitive position for Indian players versus the European player competitors in probably some of the products where you're competing with them?
No, I'm not referring to the European competition. Basically, what happens is that our boilers, right, which generate steam, they could either be running on gas or coal or briquette, right? So in Gujarat, where we have our big factories, right, we run on gas, okay? And that's what I'm talking about in terms of the input cost increase. It has very little to do with our competition in Europe. I mean, we don't have too many competitors in Europe to begin with. So it's mainly, you know, I'm talking about the Indian situation with respect to input gas prices.
Got it. And secondly, on the CDMO side, qualitatively, you know, can you throw some light on how your conversations during the year have been gone? And what does it mean for the next couple of years, maybe in terms of the traction in the business?
Yeah, okay, sure. So like I said earlier, right, CDMO is doing well, right? Last year, we had a bit of a scare, right, because it dropped from 200 crore to about 150, you know, it picked up then, right? But then, you know, obviously, we wanted to see it grow. Right. And the main problem was doctors and patients not seeing each other. But then that changed in the early part of last year. Of course, when Omicron hit, again, there was a bit of a problem. But we still sort of saw, you know, the demand building up. So that was good. I expect that that will continue. Okay, it will continue. And then with this fourth project coming online in third, fourth quarter of this year, I mean, we will see, we'll get a shot in the arm for the business, the CDMO business. And see, our experience with CDMO has been that this is a stable business. Okay, it continues very well. There are a few, you know, sometimes, I mean, COVID was COVID, right? And COVID created its own problems. And so obviously this was unforeseen. But then, you know, overall the demand in normal times is expected to be pretty solid, right? And growing. So that should help us, you know, to keep the business growing at a good clip. And as we add more projects, then you will see, you know, further growth, you know, coming as a result of that.
Sorry, if I can take a, just squeeze it a little bit more. On the new projects, you know, have there been any change in the kind of conversations you're having, your ability to get contracts, larger, bigger, more valuable contracts? Any, I mean, has our ability to compete in this market, has it changed, improved, increased?
Listen, we remain very confident on this, the prospect for the growth in the CDMO business. And this, the basis for that, right, is that we've got a very broad portfolio which basically also exhibits a very strong and broad chemistry range that we are able to offer. So apart from having filed products, right, which itself are a pretty good, you know, sort of business prospect with customers in the life cycle management space, as well as the 505(b)(2) and, you know, incremental innovator space, we also are talking with many customers, right, for, you know, chemistry-driven opportunities, but at a higher scale. Because we've been picky about not doing small stuff, right? We want to operate at, you know, at least phase three and beyond. So this is the kind of conversation that we've been having with potential, you know, partners. And just going by the fact that the interest level is so high, I would say that this business will continue to grow. And, you know, I mean, and as and how we lock in something, we are going to, you know, put it across to the investment community that, look, we've locked in a project and this is now, you know, going to happen in a matter of, you know, some time.
Thank you and best luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Tushar Manudhane from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So just on the other expenses, which has been largely stable on absolute basis, while definitely the logistics costs have, you know, increased significantly. So any other line item which has reduced or as such we have not faced the significant increase in the logistics cost?
So Tushar, as you would reckon, our business portfolio is low tonnage, high value. So basically what it means to ship out the given amount of tonnage, the freight cost as a percentage of revenue becomes very small. In fact, it's less than 1%. So even if it goes, let's say, 2x, it doesn't affect the number so much. It has not gone up so much, but, you know, just to give a sense of proportionality. And if you look at the trend, the last two quarters is where we have seen elevated level of operating costs, and this is reflective of the energy price spike that we are experiencing.
Understood. And secondly, on the similar lines, while it could be high value, low volume, but given that the transition time has increased, typically that is what we hear from the other API companies as well, but that has not led to increase in the inventory, at least in our case. So if you could also help us explain that.
Yeah, so there is a mixed play in the inventory line, Tushar. We have strategically built up inventories of raw materials, whereas there is, you know, a faster pickup of finished goods inventory as compared to last year. So that's the reason overall inventories have remained more or less or slightly improved versus last year.
But Tushar, if this China situation becomes like it drags on, right, then we don't have a choice but to cover more inventory for a longer period of time just to make sure the business doesn't get impacted. We haven't made those decisions yet, but we are actively watching that space.
Got you, got you. And lastly, I'm not sure if you have shared this earlier, but just trying my luck here. So separately, have you shared the EBIT margins for CDMO and API business?
No, we haven't kind of quantified it. Directionally, what we can say is that the margins for CDMO business are considerably higher than the margins in the generic business.
Okay, very nice. Thanks, thanks for this.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Rahul G from Abacus Asset Manager. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. 22 top line of 2100 crores.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Rahul. We are not able to hear you clearly.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please proceed. Thank you.
Yeah. Sir, in the FY22, 2100 crores of top line, including the CDMO, how much of that will be COVID or COVID-related, you know, ancillary kind of products sales for us, sir?
About 7% was the contribution last year.
Okay, okay. So, sir, we are saying expecting the 12% growth in FY23, that would be X of the COVID portfolio, right? Or on the absolute basis, we are saying?
So, Rahul, I think you asked about last year, right? The COVID contribution in our sales,
yeah.
Fiscal 2021. So, in fiscal 22, also we had, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, in FY22, it was 7%. Is that correct?
No, no, no. FY21 was 7%. FY22 is less than 5%.
Okay, okay. Fair point. Got it, sir. This is helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Rupesh Tatya from IntelliSense Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, sir, and congratulations for very, very good set of numbers. My first question, sir, is this 400 kiloliters of expansion, backward integration in Ankleshwar, what kind of, you know, margin expansion we should expect in 2 to 3 years from this?
I think you'll have to repeat that question, please.
Let him, yeah, can you repeat the question?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Rupesh, go ahead.
Okay, my question, sir, is from Uncle. We have this backward integration project, right, in Ankleshwar, which is fairly large size, 400 kiloliters. My question is, what kind of, you know, margin expansion can we see in 2 to 3 years?
So, Rupesh, the backward integration has two purposes. One is the supply chain security, and obviously we expect that investment also to generate commensurate return in line with our average. So what it will mean is that there could be margin expansion, let's say, to the tune of 80 to 100 bits. And what we would like to see is that, you know, it will add to investment, it won't add to top line, but in terms of ROCE, it should still help maintain or increase the ROCE levels.
So 1% you know, kind of sounds low. So let me ask you another way. What is the capital outlay for this project and what is the payback period?
So we have not given individual block-wise investments, but you know, it's a journey. It's not an end point, right? So the first phase that we are doing here, we are targeting backward integration of 4 to 5 projects from our top products portfolio. And then we will continue to do this for top 20 products. So it's not a one-time project. It's a strategic shift that we are implementing in our facilities. And the idea is that we go backward integrated for all the key products. So let's say 20 products in a time frame of 3 to 4 years, so which will come with additional investments over and above what we are currently doing. But it will be in a phased manner.
Okay, okay, sir. My second question, sir, is we have a big presence in CVS cardiovascular category, and one very big product, sitagliptin and sitagliptin plus metformin, I think is going off patent Europe, US in the second half of FY23. So are we going to participate here in that market, and what kind of market formation do you see in terms of number of players, price erosion?
Which product did you say?
Sitagliptin.
Sitagliptin. Yeah, we have sitagliptin in our portfolio, and we are working with customers already. So it would contribute there for sure.
So what kind of aspirational market share do you hope to see?
We won't get into that because we don't typically get into the product level discussion, right? It'll all depend on how well our customers do at the front end also, right?
Would we be in top five?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that for sure.
Okay, and in terms of number of players and price erosion?
See, that's what front end is very difficult to say, na? I mean, we don't know how the front end, like recently there was the lacosamide launch in the US, right? I mean, the expectation was there would be three players on day one, but it ended up being more. So, I mean, you know, that's how life is, right?
Okay.
So we don't know.
Okay. And then, sir, my last question is, if I look at your presentation, your capacity is going to double roughly from FY21 base in FY23. And then again, there will be a Solapur greenfield. So do you not think 12-14% is, very, very kind of low kind of guidance? And another thing is, I mean, there is a China plus one. And I mean, there's been, never been a more better time to be ambitious if you are from India.
Okay, so
do you not think 12-14% is kind of low?
Okay, see. We'd like to do more, and I'm sure that, if the business conditions, go back to normal the way they were, right, I'm sure, we'll be able to, track a higher growth. But on the capacity issue, like Bhavesh explained, right, a significant portion of this capacity is a backward integrated capacity for backward integration. So that doesn't play out. That doesn't play out at the front end. Okay, it's done with a more strategic intent in mind. So we would have to then look at the incremental capacity that is servicing the front-end business, the front-end API business. Okay, and again, you've got to realize that these things don't happen in lockstep. Okay, we basically plan capacities about 1 to 1.5 years in advance, depending on how our launches are coming along. So, because it takes time to build capacity, it takes some more time to qualify capacity. So, because of all that and seeing the way the launch plan is for the next 2 to 3 years is how the capacity planning happens. And obviously, the investment has to go in at that time. So, it will all play out, but whether it, we do it on a year-to-year basis, right, that is something that's not possible.
Okay. So just a small question, sir. How would the approvals happen for Ankleshwar capacity and the Dahej blocks? Approvals are already in place, or will be easy to get, or will be a long wait?
So we already Dahej and Ankleshwar are inspected sites by major regulatory bodies. So that's not a big challenge from an approval perspective, but I mean, so you don't get an individual approval on an incremental capacity, but you certainly have to validate products before you take them in. So that's the additional time that it takes for us to be able to introduce products. That's the advantage of doing brownfield versus greenfield in our business.
Okay. So commercial contribution will be meaningful in H2 from these facilities.
Yeah, I did mention that in an earlier question.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, sir, for answering my question.
For sure, yeah. Sure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in this conference, we request you to limit your questions to 2 per participant only. The next question is on the line of Saion Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. So this 12% to 14% growth that you're talking about, can you split it up between how much you're factoring in price increase, volume of existing products, and new launches?
So it's a mix of, Saion, it's a mix of price and volume, okay, but largely coming from volume, you know, because while there are price increases, right, I mean, there are also certain erosions that happen in, you know, in different products. So on the basket, if I see, right, largely it's coming out of volume growth.
Okay. And if you look back, let's say, past couple of years or 3 years, on aggregate on your existing products, does your price go up, down, or at an aggregate it's been flattish?
Okay. On an aggregate level, prices usually stay stable, okay, because on the, you know, the base business, which is about molecules that are like 3 to 4 years already in commercial, right, prices stay stable. Of course, the geographically it varies. Prices vary quite a bit, right, depending on the geographies that, you know, we are selling in. So it's the same API, but, you know, depending on the geographies, we would price it differently. Based on competition. Okay. So prices tend to stay stable. It's only when things get a little out of hand, you know, with input costs is when, you know, we go up and increase prices. And typically, you know, when we develop a next generation process, prices come down. Of course, margins don't get impacted because we are much more cost effective on the next process. So we are able to retain or even improve margins, but the price does come down.
So your commentary suggests that, you know, margins with all these pressures on cost are largely going to be there, you know, broadly in that range. So, I mean, if you, let's say if I take quarter four as an example, where you did 514 crores of top line, 142 crores of EBITDA with 27-28% margins. If you were to factor in the cost that you see today, right, whether it is energy prices, raw material prices, would you say your EBITDA number would fall by how much? Okay. Is it possible to quantify that or, you know, give some range if you were to factor in the cost that you see today?
So, Sayan, the costs have been elevated for a while, right, for different reasons and in different areas. So, we were hoping that quarter four should be normal. It is not. So if the situation remain like what it is today, I think the margin should track to where we are in last couple of quarters. If the things go bad environmentally, then there will be some adverse impact which we can't predict, right? It will be speculative in nature. And if things become more normal than what they are, then obviously we hope to see improvements.
Okay, so in that case, you can potentially go back to 30% kind of a margin if things, you know, energy prices and commodity prices sort of come down.
Yeah, it's all in our gross margin line, if you can see, if you see there. That's where the, you know, the impact we are feeling, and a little bit in the other expenses because of energy prices. So obviously, if things go back to where they were, let's say, last year, then our business model should support 30% EBITDA margin.
Okay, understood. Have you shared the numbers, you know, the sale to Glenmark for this quarter and full year?
So in this quarter, it would be around 36-37%. Full year would be around 39-40%.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Imran Khan from Longbow Capital India. Capital Advisors, please go ahead. Mr. Imran Khan, your line is in the talk mode. Please go ahead. Mr. Imran Khan, your line is in the talk mode. Please go ahead. Mr. Imran Khan, your line is in the talk mode. Please go ahead. As there's no response from the current participant, that was our last question. I would now like to close the call. On behalf of the management of Glenmark Life Sciences, we thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.